The historian David McCullough put it right. History is the story of people, of who we are, and why we are the way we are. Doing history, then, is less about the things and objects of our past, and more about understanding the experiences of those who came before us.
Got up in the morning and helped my mother and dad and do barn work, and then I got off 8 o'clock to walk to school.
There was a giant playground, open fields. There was a woods. There was a stream that ran through it.
My brother and sister and I had to walk a mile. It was really, really hard for us to walk those hills to get up to it.
It was like grades 1 through 8, and we all sat in a common room with a pot-bellied stove in the middle of the room.
If you got your lessons done quickly and correctly, you were allowed to go and bring water to the school. There was no pump there. There was no well on the grounds. So we had to walk about, a quarter of a mile to a house that was owned by the Goldnecks. And Mrs. Goldneck would meet us at the door. We had an open bucket of water, and she would fill the bucket of water, and we would walk back. And it was always a question of how much of the water actually was able to get back to the school.
So we started with arithmetic, then we did writing, and then we did reading. We did geography around noon, and then we did, I can't think of everything we had. But anyway, we got done in the school about 3 o'clock, and that's when we got the young kids off home about a half hour before the older ones got out. And then we walked the rest of the way home, and that was our day. My name is Genevieve Takas, and I'm from South Beaver Township. I've lived here all my life, and you are listening to the Little Beaver Historical Society podcast.
Well, Mr. Mark Carter, thank you very much for adding to our podcast. We also interviewed Charles Townsend and Arlene Townsend and my mother, Genevieve Takas. And you're our fourth person to be interviewed for our podcast. So we have about 17 different podcasts at this time. So if you want to research us, bring us up on littlebeaverhistorical.org. And you'll see information about the Historical Society and about the podcast.
Littlebeaverhistorical.org.
Yes.
Okay.
Welcome to this special episode of Little Beaver Historical Society's podcast. I'm Kevin Farkas of the Social Voice Project, and we produce this podcast in partnership with the museum to help capture, preserve, and share the voices and stories of local history today and for future generations. Now, Bev, I think all these episodes are special. That's how I say that. But would you agree this is going to be a special episode?
Absolutely. Everybody's going to have to learn something about school and the early school days.
That's right. We're going to talk about one-room schoolhouses here in northern Beaver County, in particular the South Beaver Township area. But Beaver County was full of one-room schoolhouses. So we're going to talk about this phenomenon here today. This piece that you're listening to today is a companion piece to what is on the Little Beaver Historical Society's website, which takes a little deeper look into the school buildings themselves, the teachers, students, and William McGuffey, who had a major impact on American education, early education, in the 19th century, as well as the one-room schoolhouse. Today, our guest is Beverly Young, longtime volunteer with the Little Beaver Historical Society, board member and treasurer. Currently your treasurer, right,
yes,
Bev?
Yes, I am.
You handle the money?
I do.
Ka-ching, ka-ching, okay.
Yeah, ka-ching.
That's what makes the world go round. Now, Beverly joins us to talk about her history work and putting together our podcast episode, which is called The One Room Schoolhouse, Lessons and Life Experiences. Along with this podcast audio, we have a companion exhibit on the Little Beaver Historical Society website that complements this program and explores the historical, social, cultural institution of the One Room Schoolhouse here in Northern Beaver County. You know, I want to start this off, and this is when you look at that online exhibit on the website, it leads off with this quote. This is from Richard Fraze, and he was significant in Beaver County's educational system. In 1888, he wrote, "We must educate or we must perish. That's a saying that has met the approval of intelligent citizens everywhere. Schools well supported and properly conducted are the cheap defense of nations. The education of the whole man, body, soul, and spirit, is the panacea for most of the ills that afflict the commonwealth." Now, that's kind of weird old-timey language, but I think we could agree today that education still matters to us as a society, to democracy. It matters to people.
It does, yes.
Yes, absolutely. I like that quote because it's, one, it's old, and it shows us that, you know, we've always believed in education in Beaver County and Pennsylvania, which was an early adopter of the free school public education system, whereas, you know, all children could go to school free of charge through taxes, right? Albeit through taxes.
Right.
Somebody had to pay for it,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
But it was an opportunity that was afforded to all citizens because it mattered, as Richard Fraze says, it matters to democracy that we are all educated. So Beverly, you participated in this project in a very special way, and I would really like to talk about that. You were our oral historian on this project.
I was. I didn't really know what I was getting in for, but I thought I'd give it a try. It sounded like something interesting, and I would enjoy doing it, and I certainly did. I certainly learned a lot and was happy to participate.
Well, what we mean by oral historian is that you actually interviewed people who were alive, people who actually went to a one-room schoolhouse. Now, these things didn't go out in the 1850s, right? One-room schoolhouses existed well into 1950s and 60s.
They did. Yes, they did. I'm thinking that our South Beaver School, and I was one of the earliest in 1954, was constructed at that time. So I just missed going to a one-room school by 1 year. So I missed that experience. But I was able to relive it through my mother and talking to her.
Well, you interviewed several.
I did. I had, I would say, four or five different people that I interviewed that went to different one-room schoolhouses. And each interviewee had come up with something interesting from each one of their schools. So I was excited to learn about different schools and the teachers and so.
We had Charles Townsend, Arlene Townsend, his wife.
Yes.
Your mother.
Yes, Jenny Takis.
Mm-hmm. And you did a telephone interview.
I did.
To Florida.
And that was with Mark Carter, who lived in South Beaver at one time, and also Lil Stakunas and Sandy Vizhnek. So those were the ones that I had the opportunity to interview and thoroughly enjoyed all of them.
Well, visitors to the podcast page will be able to listen to those interviews in full. And we will also have the transcripts up as well. So folks who have difficulty seeing can listen, and those who have difficulty hearing can read the transcript. These are very fascinating experiences that you captured. And I don't want to miss this opportunity to say how important it is for local history that you trudged out there with a microphone in hand and a recorder, and you made these appointments, and you went to folks' homes, and you set up the equipment, and you asked them about their one-room schoolhouse experiences, which is quite varied, though, as you said, right?
Yes, certainly was. I mean, everybody's experience was a little different. Mrs. Takunas had shed some light on things that I hadn't thought about. I'm trying to recall now, and Sandy's experience was different. But all in all, I mean, it was all together in one little room around a potbelly stove, educating each other from the oldest to the youngest, and having that encouragement from one child to the next one age to the next. So it wasn't as it is today. They have everybody of one age in a classroom. This was all ages in the classroom that were experiencing and learning from each other.
Mm-hmm. One of the hallmarks of one-room schoolhouses is they're by and large rural, right? It was a rural setting. There were one-room schoolhouses in more urban settings, but by and large, these were rural farm community institutions.
Most of them were, yes.
That not only served as a school, they served as polling places, public meeting places, entertainment places. Dances were held in one-room schoolhouses as well. But that is one hallmark, the rural nature of the school. And you mentioned it too. Everybody was in these places together. All ages were lumped together. My mother, who went to a one-room schoolhouse in Eastvale, said that she heard those lessons over and over again, right? When she was younger, she heard the older ones. She was older, she heard the younger lessons. And that actually was really reinforcing for her education. What did your mother have to say about her experience?
The fact that on cold winter days, her brothers had to at times carry her because they couldn't go through the snow. It was difficult to walk across the field to get to the school. And so her brothers either drug her through or they carried her, put her on their shoulders. You know, they knew that education was important. I mean, my mother's mother couldn't speak English when she came to this country. So grandma taught herself. And she realized that in order for my mother Jenny to get ahead in life, she had to have an education. And so she encouraged the kids to go out across the field, down in the valley, across over to the Johnson School. Then they came home and they taught grandma. They actually brought, you know, the language back and taught grandma the words so that grandma could teach herself to read and write too.
Oh, that's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. Did your mother have a sense that education was important when she was a kid? Or obviously, in hindsight now, she can look back on that. And you can make that inference.
Yes.
But when she was a kid?
Probably not. It was more like, oh, I'm getting away from home and I get to see my friends or some other friends that don't live real close. But still, it was, you know, a social time at school. The teachers were very strict. And learning was the utmost important item why they were there. But again, they get to familiarize themselves with people that live down the road or new games that they didn't have anybody to play with perhaps on the farm. But when they got to school, they had the opportunity to socialize and play those new games. And even just to see the dress of the teacher. I know my grandmother probably didn't have that type of dress as the teacher would have worn or seen the teacher prep for the school itself, whether it be the fire, you stoke the fire, or the water that was brought from the well or whatever. But everybody had their own chores to do, and so they learned responsibility.
Yeah, that's right, chores at mm-hmm. school. When I was in school, I think the only chores we ever had
was dust the erasers,
right? Dust the erasers, take them outside, bang them together.
Dust the erasers.
Yeah, maybe empty the trash bins mm-hmm. or something like that. But yeah, in the one-room schoolhouse, Charlie Townsend could attest to having to go get water down the road to some place that had a pump or a well.
Yes, that's right? Correct.
And he had to carry the water.
No telling how much of it got back in the bucket because by the time they splashed it around carrying it, only a third of it maybe made it back to the school for them to drink.
Right. Oh, that's a precious memory. Some children, they ate at school.
They did, and their lunches were very skimpy. Their lunches might have been maybe a jelly sandwich.
Made by the teacher.
Sometimes made by the teacher. Sometimes they brown bagged it and brought it from home, but sometimes made by the teacher, you're right. Maybe she brought a tomato in and had a tomato sandwich, but everything was fresh, homemade bread, and maybe a piece of fruit.
Right.
And water.
Now, Mr. Clark, he talks about the sort of the social experience that he had fighting the other kids. Nothing new under the sun, right? Right? And Charlie Townsend talks about how important the playground was. The school that he went to, they built a big ball field. Again, you go back to this idea that these are rural communities. So a ball field was a big thing to all these children who lived miles down this way, miles down that country road, to come together and play, to socialize, to learn how to be, well, fighters if they needed to be, as Mark Clark says.
Yeah, they had to hold their ground. I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of perhaps bullying going on even at that time.
Yeah.
And so they would definitely have to defend themselves, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
Especially the young ones who were probably picked on by the older ones.
Oh, sure, sure. And maybe also defended
yes.
by some of the older ones. And to me,
yes.
this is one of the interesting lessons of the One Room Schoolhouse. It was a real collective. It was a real group of kids of different ages, different backgrounds.
Correct.
Even. Some
yes.
were poor, some mm-hmm. were not so poor. But they were all put together, and they learned how to coexist as a social group. But they also learned how to coexist in terms of their academics. Now, let's talk about that a little bit. What does your mother have to say about the quality of education that she had?
The reading, writing, and arithmetic, you know, that she had, why it was well taught. And she uses it to this day. And she looks at what the children are taught and how they're taught nowadays. And she goes, I can't believe they're teaching them that way. What are they thinking? But at any rate, it's something that she can apply today. Subtraction, addition, her penmanship is still very, very good today, which they don't even teach cursive penmanship.
That was a hallmark of education
yes,
back in the day.
Yes, that round, round, ready, right to practice and stay inside those lines. But yes, Mom's education has served her well.
She mentions in the interview that you did reading, arithmetic, geography, history, mm-hmm. and art.
Yes,
she mentions art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does she mention William McGuffey readers?
She did not. However, I remember the Dick and Jane that I learned to read out of. Mostly, I loved looking at the pictures in the book. How boring a book is unless you have pictures, I think, you at that age when you're young.
Right.
So the Dick and Jane was Spot and the dog. And I don't remember the cat's name, but I'm sure there was a cat in there too. And ponies and horses and what have you. But the pictures, over and over, I would look at those.
Now, you mentioned that you just missed going to
yes.
One Room School.
Yes.
I bet your older siblings did.
My brother Tom didn't go. He just missed the one room. So actually, it was 2 years for me and one for Tom. But an acquaintance of ours, Butch Crissa, was the last year at the one room school, which was the Johnson School, where my mother went to school too. So Mom was born in 1930. So at the age of 6 or 7, then she attended the school. And there was 8 one room schools in South Beaver at that time.
Wow, really?
So, yes,
8.
There was. Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
And right at the foot of our lane was the McCloy School. So at that time, I could hear the children playing outside because our farm was up on the hill. You could hear the children down there playing at recess time. And I was too young yet to go, but you could still hear them, and I knew they were down there. Always wondered about playtime down at the school. The restrooms outside and the well, the pump was there. And so the school was used later on as a home for someone. So they converted the school into a real nice residential house.
I've often wondered what happens to these buildings, right? Once they are abandoned, some of the schools I know.
Yeah, have just fallen and collapsed.
And you can still see them today.
Yes, the ground was probably on loan from a landowner. For instance, the Johnson School, the ground is still owned by the Stakunises. The school has just collapsed. The Court School, which is on property that my cousin Melanie owns, is still standing, but the other schools have all gone. That is the only one that's still standing is the Court School, and that's where Mr. Townsend and Arlene went, mm-hmm. the school there.
So we actually have a very special guest here sitting in with us, Melanie Todorich. Now, you own property that the school still is on.
Correct. Court School, the old Court School. And that's also where Mark Carter had gone to also.
Oh. Do you remember that school when it was operational?
Never knew it then.
You never knew it?
No. Never knew it. Heard many tales from that, but heard more stories about the old McCloy School, rather, because that's where my mom and my uncles had gone to.
Mm-hmm. Tell us some stuff that you remember.
Oh, one of the good ones my mom always told about. They would
the way the school was positioned along the side of the road, the door sat on the end instead of along the road. And so the windows were along the road. And my grandmother lived up over on top of the hill where Bev was raised at the on Court Road there.
A full disclosure, you guys are cousins.
Yes, we are. Okay. We are first cousins. Correct. Okay. We are first cousins. And our grandma used to have a still, and she would make whiskey. And when the still would be going, you could smell it in the area, and you evidently saw the smoke from the from it work and cooking. And then the old black sedan would come, and the kids would be sitting in the classroom watching the black sedan go up the hill to the farm so they could go and dismantle it and destroy the batch and whatever like that. So when that would happen, my mom and all the kids, everybody's noses would be up to the window watching out and watching the black sedan go up, and then a matter of time before it come down, and mom would go on home, and whatever they could salvage, they did, and what they didn't was destroyed. But and they had other stories they liked. What was very good there that they liked is they used to have the penny socials.
Penny socials.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Everybody was to bring a dish full of whatever to school, and all the parents would come, and you would pay one penny to get a scoop of this, that, whatever, and everyone would sit and socialize in the classroom, parents and children. Whoever was not working the fields was able to come and enjoy that. That was a good social time. Yeah, the kids got to really know the families, even though they knew each other, but everybody was so busy working fields and working, doing chores and that there was really no time to sit and have a social. So that was a special gathering for them. Mom always spoke
right
of that.
School.
Yes.
Right at the school.
Right at the school. Then they got to show their parents what they were doing in school more so, because, so I think that's even when some of the parents got to meet some of the other kids that they didn't know that maybe lived further down the road, you know, or whatever, or the parents of them. So it was nice.
Mm-hmm. Tell them the story about your mom's reciting.
Oh, way back when, something they had to do, recite like the Declaration of Independence, or extensively long poems. My mom was very good at reciting poems and learning poems. She lived for that. And there was a front row seat. His name was Reggie Steiner. Reggie Steiner would look at my mom while she was reciting whatever, and he would make faces at her and just stick his tongue out and flap his ears and do anything he could to make her laugh and get her, throw her off. So she would find a spot in the far upper corner in the back of the room, and the one poem that she recited was like 7, 8, maybe 9 stanzas long, and she got through it. She rattled it off so fast. And so the teacher, Peggy Townsend said, "Okay, Annie, now that you caught the train, now you can go back and start all over again," because she had rattled it off so fast. So now she had to go back again. Meanwhile, she's still trying to give a mean look to Reggie Steiner, thank you. But she had to do it all over again, much slower so it could be understood. And she did, and it was like pulling hair out of her head to do that. Meanwhile, Reggie's still sitting there making faces at her and so on. But it was a good one. Yeah, good memories. My mother had gone to 8th grade. Bev's dad had gone all the way through Beaver Falls High School, and so did our Uncle Frank. But then our Uncle George, he only went to like 5th grade, I believe it was, before he left. And he started out trucking and everything. But one thing they dwelled on is if you didn't get the math or you didn't get the history of the year you were taught it, being in the one room and it's now being taught to the younger class, and the younger class, had you had stated earlier, they got to reinforce. And what they got to know in those short 5, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever, was so well embedded into them that society, that era of people were so intelligent. They were able to build on it. They are a very, very strong generation of people, those that came through the one-room schoolhouse. And I'll even venture to say they're stronger than the educations we have today. Those educations of those people, even through college age, through colleges, the foundations that they built off of are just phenomenal compared to what I know I myself had. So my hat's off to them.
The caliber of education seems to be higher and more well-rounded, in a classical sense at least, where, you know, you could probably throw out a reference to ancient Greek or Roman mythology, and the older generation may get that. They may know that because they learned that through these textbooks that they had, McGuffey readers, for example. Do you remember hearing about McGuffey reader?
I remember hearing about it. I learned from Dick and Jane also. Mm-hmm. And that was through Catholic school, Dick and Jane, 12 years of Catholic school. And my mom did a comparison, and she was just truly amazed. There you had 3, 4, 5 words in a sentence, and the lettering is so large, and the page is basically empty other than a picture. The majority of it was a picture, where the McGuffey readers that they did then, and she showed it to us, and to know what they learned in that small print that they learned how to read, and the scope of the subjects, learning about flowers and animals and countries and so much more detailed, and it was incredible. Such a difference.
Very advanced for such a young age.
Very advanced. Yeah. The topics alone.
All the wording. The vocabulary.
Yes. Remember you and I looked at a McGuffey reader, and I forget, was it 3rd or 4th grade McGuffey reader?
Yes.
And it was extremely advanced. It would be what I would think they're learning like in high school nowadays. Major difference.
Now, do you have a sense that students during that era were really expected to go to, say, 8th grade and then go to work?
Yes. At 8th grade, that was all the education that was needed to continue on in life, to go into the mills and work, or to work on the farm, because they were needed. After 8th grade, the boys were needed to work on the farm, and maybe they only went 3 or 4 months in the winter months to school. They didn't go through the summer because the summer was so important to be, especially on the farms anyway. And so they were limited as to how many school days they did get a year.
Right.
Yes.
Very different than today. Mm-hmm. Just a whole different perspective on schooling and how it matters in our lives. On one hand, you had this very compressed, rigorous education for the early years up to 8th grade. But then you had expectations, really, that beyond that, you're kind of on your own. If you needed to go work the fields or support your family, you did that. Mm-hmm. We don't think like that at all today.
No,
about
we
education.
Don't. No. Back then, it was a lot of it was on-the-job training. Even when you're working on the farms, you know, you've seen your dad and you learned from your peers in handling machinery or what was required from you, whether it be milking the cows or bringing them in or baling hay. I mean, it was just common sense, a lot of it, too.
Yeah. So, Beverly, your interviews are going to be online, as I said earlier, and they'll be in the audio form as well as the written transcripts will be there as well. So people who are interested in all this can really take a deep dive into all that content. But before we go, I want to get your sense of what it was like to be a public historian, going out there into the community and talking to people who had these experiences. What was that process like? Did you go out there with a list of questions all ready to go? And well, you certainly had the recorder and a microphone and a mic stand, and I showed you how to sort of
yes,
set up.
Yes, she did.
Did you have any trepidations like, oh, is this going to work or not work?
No, I wanted to do it. I mean, it was something that I look forward to doing. And setting up the equipment was no problem at all. And the people that I interviewed were very comfortable with being in their own home and recording in their own home. But I felt when they were telling me all about it, I was reliving as I was right there in the classroom with them. So it was, you know, quite rewarding that way. I was excited about doing it, and I was glad to share the experience with them and that they shared it with me.
Were they glad to share?
Almost definitely. They had to think about it for a while.
Yeah.
They had to think about it, but it all came back. One word would lead to another and would open another door, and they would see another opportunity to share another experience at school, whether it was as somebody getting reprimanded, or whether it was the teacher sharing a new novel or new story reading out loud, and they were all engrossed in it. Talking about the stove, who fought over sitting closer to the stove in the wintertime, you know, and their coats being hung up and their lunch boxes being put in a certain place. So you experience when they're talking about that.
And as they were talking, they were remembering more.
More and more,
and
yes.
And it was coming to light.
Yes, yeah. And getting comfortable with sharing their classroom days with us.
Yeah, that's very important in this kind of work that, you know, when we go out with this technology, and it really helps if we know people that we're interviewing, and you know everybody that you talk to.
Yes.
Right,
mm-hmm.
So that helps, and it helped for them to be comfortable. And you let them talk.
And they were happy after they once got started. They were a little reluctant, but after the initial breaking of the ice, so to speak, why they were happy to share the experiences of those classroom days and school days with me, yes.
Now, do you think that out there in the community, so we're Little Beaver Historical Society, Northern Beaver County, how many more stories out there with people who live these experiences, whether it's a one-room schoolhouse or you name it, working in the mills or working on the farms or what have you? How many more stories are out there?
Oh, there must be hundreds of them, but we don't want to lose them. We have to preserve them.
That's really important to understand about this kind of work, that people out there with these lived experiences are there, and they are, unfortunately, the elders are passing on.
They are, yes.
And if we don't take the time to do this kind of work, which is, you know, quite frankly, it takes a bit of resources to do. It takes a bit of know-how. It takes planning. You have to commit. Based on your experience, it sounds like this is such a worthwhile kind of project.
Oh, my goodness, yes. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think I was really enjoying doing it.
Yeah.
I would really like to have another topic to maybe pursue and learn more about.
Like what?
Yeah,
like what?
Well, I don't know. We'll come up with something.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know, there are people who are veterans. That's always a great topic.
Oh, my goodness,
great subject,
yes.
To talk to veterans who, you know, today is, we're recording this on December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. There's that. And there are people who've been through the Great Depression. Right?
Mm-hmm.
People have been through social movements. And even people in our communities who have experienced contemporary events such as 9/11 or the last election cycle even, their reactions, their lived experiences are important too, right? As much
exactly,
as the older
yes.
stuff, even contemporary things are important as well. Yeah. I always thought it would be a great project for communities to do. Is on the anniversary of these events. So here we are, you know, Pearl Harbor Day. I mean, there are people out there who still remember Pearl Harbor when they first heard about the Japanese attack. And, you know, and I've interviewed a lot of people, a lot of veterans. Some were at Pearl Harbor. Some definitely were in the war after Pearl Harbor, but they all remember where they were, Pearl Harbor, right? When they heard it on the radio, of course, not television.
I remember where I was and what I was doing when President Kennedy got shot.
President Kennedy, right? Mm-hmm. The assassination,
yes.
Right?
I know exactly where I was, in gym class.
In gym class. Yeah.
So, but those things you do remember, they're so vivid in your mind.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they're vivid because they were impactful.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, fearful. People didn't know what was going on. 9/11, for example, was one of those moments. We didn't know what was going on, what would happen in the days thereafter.
Right.
The pandemic is another experience.
Exactly. I was just going to say that, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So have microphone, have recorder, we'll travel.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Out there in the community is very important kind of historical work that I like to encourage people to embrace, especially historical societies and museums, if they can. And use this technology, which has been never more affordable than it is today. You know, you can go out with, you know, I have my little cell phone right here. You can go out and do these interviews with a cell phone or your smartphone, and it would be pretty darn good quality, right? But beyond that, I mean, there's the issue of, you know, knowing what you want to do and going out there prepared. You had a list of questions. that we had gone over, and I remember when I was showing you how to use the equipment, I was giving you some pointers on how to do what they call open-ended questions, for example.
Right.
Questions that allow people or inspire people to think more broadly and more openly about...
Just not a yes and a no question.
Yeah, not a yes and no
not
question.
Not a yes and no.
If you ask a yes and no question, you'll get a yes or no.
Yes and no answer. And I tried to avoid that.
Yeah. Well, you did a great job. I mean, you know, if people will see this here, that you asked some very qualitative questions. Responses were very thoughtful. And I think this is a real testament to the power of doing oral history work on the local history level. So I want to thank you for being a part of this. I want to thank Melanie Tutterich for popping in and sharing your experiences with us as well.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do this. I so enjoyed it and look forward to maybe another time.
You betcha.
You are listening to a production of the Social Voice Podcast Network.